I'm speaking here with Mary O'Hagan, as we said, former Mental Health Commissioner and a leading expert in the field of mental health recovery-based services. She's in New Zealand. Well, I'm pleased to say Will Hall joins us now from Portland, Oregon. Thanks so much for joining us, Will.
Thanks for having me on the show.
The Icarus Project, your involvement grew out of your own personal experience. You were living with schizoaffective disorder. What is that experience like? What has it been like for you?
I was diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder, schizophrenia. And these diagnoses, these labels that are given to people, there isn't really a lot of specificity or science, or they're often just sort of handed out, and the actual experiences are much, much more diverse, much, much more individual, much, much more unique person to person. Some of the things that I was going through, I mean, I definitely go through very difficult extreme states. When I was in the hospital, I would spend weeks where I couldn't really communicate with anyone. I would have very angry voices in my head, voices telling me to hurt myself, voices, very nasty voices attacking me. Before I was in the hospital, I was so frightened of my my roommates that I would hide from them, and I would leave the apartment going in and out of the window. So I don't think that anyone here is debating the existence of very difficult suffering, very extreme mind states. There's a question, however, once we get into the interpretation of them, do we say, oh, we can just put everyone into the same box of having schizophrenia or schizoaffective disorder, and then is everyone just going to be given medication because that's what the clinical treatment says, or are we actually going to try and look at and understand each individual's experience?
You are someone who has gone through the experience of coming off medication and managing your mental health issues in a different way. How did that come about?
Well, I talk to a lot of different groups. I'm very much involved in community education and advocacy, and for a lot of people, just looking at me and meeting me, and I'm reasonably intelligent and I can communicate, I mean, that itself breaks a stereotype. And the stereotype is that people, you know, once you have crossed the line and you're schizophrenic, that's it. You're just always going to be sort of this kind of wild creature that can't really be communicated with. And actually, the research shows that I'm not the only person who has been able to do this. There are many, many people who have terrible experiences and end up with very extreme diagnoses of schizophrenia, paranoid schizophrenia, bipolar, locked up. And just through whatever process, it's a very individual thing, we are able to recover and make it out of those states and make it out of those experiences and come back into the community. Now, for me, medication was very harmful. And what we're seeing now is that after years of being told that, well, medication is the miracle cure, medication is the great hope, medication is the treatment, and mental illness is the disease, what we're actually seeing now is that there's been a tremendous pharmaceutical company profit motive in really misleading the public and pushing the medical establishment in a certain direction. And actually, for myself and for many people, medication can actually not only not help, but it can actually make things a lot worse. I mean, when I was taking antipsychotic drugs, I really was not myself. I mean, I was very, very much out of my head in a bad way. I was quieter. I was more tranquilized. I was more docile and more manageable in the institutional settings that I was in. But in terms of coming back to myself, it really was a long journey that the mental health system didn't really play much of a role in. I had to really find out for myself. I had to start experimenting with holistic health. I was able to change my diet and look at the role of nutrition and food allergies and figuring out what foods I was sensitive to and what foods caused me very bad reactions. I was able to get help from herbalists and from acupuncturists and start to take some control back over my life. And one of the most important things for me was connecting with a community of people who didn't see me as a disease and didn't see me as a disorder, but actually helped me to look at the possibility of starting to make choices and make decisions to help myself rather than sort of turning over my treatment and turning over my recovery to professionals to tell me what to do. And so having a community of people around me, of supporters, of friends, of people who had been through the system like I had, and who shared a different view and shared a more positive view of my potential. That was really, really important for my recovery.
How do you manage, when you need to manage, your mental health episodes now, the more extreme episodes, which I presume you still experience? How do you deal with them so that they are, or that you are, safe when they are happening?
Well, I mean, first of all, there's a kind of an assumption in the background that we're dealing with sort of dangerous characters, that you know, things that get out of hand, we can sort of run off and become murderers or serial killers. If you look at the movies or television, I mean, whenever you hear the word schizophrenia or hear the word psychosis, it's usually associated with violence. And it's very important for us to understand that that's really a stereotype, that the studies look at the rates of violence, and there really are no correlations between having a mental health diagnosis and committing violent crimes. That's really a myth that society has put out. In fact, people who have a diagnosis, a mental health diagnosis, are much more likely to be victims of crime. So that's one thing. And I think that reducing the fear is important in myself. And I mean, I can just give you some examples. Like, I have learned that there, through my own educational process and learning about myself, I learned that there are a lot of things that I want to watch out for. Like, for example, my sleeping. I know that if I start to go through a period where I don't sleep, or I miss sleep, or I start sleeping fewer hours, I go to sleep later at night, that starts to move. It's like an early warning sign for me. So I'm able to notice that and then do what I need to do to help support myself to getting good night's sleep, because that prevents further problems coming down the road. I'm able, for example, to notice when I start to become isolated from my friends and colleagues. If I go through a period of having a lot of emotional turmoil, I have difficult hurt, experience something difficult happens to me, and I don't talk to people about it, I disconnect from people, I can start heading down a path that can create problems for me. So basically, I have a lot of different things that I've learned are kind of like my early warning, wellness tools that I really need to take care of. And I think that that's really kind of true of all of us. All of us, you know, sort of learn to sort of watch out for our health. But I think for those of us who have, have more extreme emotional states that we go into, it just becomes much more something that we have to be even more vigilant about and more careful about.
I want to ask you, though, whether this is for everyone or whether for some people medication is essential. And let me just read you an emailer who's just sent this through. She's in New Zealand. My own experience contradicts the views you're about to air. I have bipolar disorder type. It's hereditary. I have a grandmother, cousin, aunt and sister with the same problem. It's characterised by psychotic mania followed by depression. I had 4 episodes of mania requiring hospitalisation in the 80s. I stopped having episodes of mania when I accepted that I have to stay on lithium for life. I have had a successful career in between episodes and since. Going mad did not offer any insights. It frightened my friends and family and put my safety at risk. Untreated mania can lead to death by exhaustion, and I'm so glad I was hospitalised and brought down, though the experience was unpleasant at the time. I'd just like to give you this first person testimony to lay alongside what your guests have to say. Will, is it your view that for some people, medication is an essential part of managing themselves, looking after themselves and their conditions well?
Well, we have gotten into a place in this discussion in society where we're really seeing things in either-or terms. If someone comes along, like myself, who says that, you know, I've been diagnosed with schizophrenia and I don't take medication and that's better for me, we somehow think that that's like the person is saying that's true for everyone. And if the person who writes the email finds that lithium is helpful for them, I'm really glad that they've been able to make that discovery and find something that's useful for them in their life. The problem is that we start to make an assumption that everyone who has those diagnoses, everyone who has those experiences, has to go down a certain treatment path with taking medication. And that's actually very harmful, because it says that many people who don't actually do better, then we end up pushing them or forcing them to take the medication. I'm very, very pro-choice medication, but I'm also pro-diversity. And so I think that we have to recognize that there's a great diversity in these experiences, and we have tended to see them only in one way, rather than validating and acknowledging the many, many people who may, in fact, do better without medication, who need options and choices. I would also, question whether those of us who are, being pushed medication on us, whether we're actually being given accurate information, because usually when people are offered medication or given medication, they aren't really told the big picture, the real accurate information about the dangers of the medication. They're not told the accurate information about the science, and they're not told accurate information about possible alternatives. So, for example, the person who emailed says that their bipolar disease is hereditary. Now, I have no question that the person's family has a history of very, very difficult mood states, but whether we can call that genetic or whether there's an environmental learning factor, I mean, people grow up in poverty. Child abuse, for example, is passed down from generation to generation to generation. We wouldn't call that genetic just because it's passed down from generation, because there may be a very strong learning component, an environmental component. So when we talk about genetics, let's be honest that the science has not found a gene that causes bipolar disorder. There's no test that you can do. There's no way that you can discriminate a normal brain from a so-called bipolar brain or a normal brain from a so-called schizophrenic brain. But in fact, the pharmaceutical companies have made tremendous profits by convincing us that, well, these are disorders, they're genetic, and we just have to take a medication, we have to go a certain way.
Well, can I ask you one thing? Because part of what your movement seems to be saying is that we need to let people be the way they are. You talk about diversity. We need to let people have the mental health experiences that currently we are inclined to medicate away. Is that fair? And does that require a greater tolerance and a much broader mindset in the whole population?
Well, first of all, I think we need, and this is true of New Zealand, it's true of the U.S., it's true around the world, we need to listen to the voices of people who actually have been through these experiences and who have come through them and who are advising changes in the mental health system. There are folks who are just completely pro-medications and pro-doctors, but there are many, many voices out there that share my experience and who are saying, look, we need to have a different view. And pro-diversity does not mean that, well, we just need to sort of let people go through whatever they're going through. I'm instead very much in favor of helping people and supporting people. I think we need good mental health services. This is not an anti-help or anti-therapy or anti-counseling perspective at all. We need very good community services. But the question is, are those services actually harming people, and how can we actually support people? And if we're forcing medications on people, if we are very quick to use restraints, if we're very quick to lock people up in hospitals, to force drug them, these are traumatizing things that we are doing to people. When we label someone with a disease and tell them they will not recover, that itself can create a self-fulfilling prophecy where it really devastates the person's sense of their own recovery and their own well-being. When I was told that I was schizophrenic, that itself was a very harmful thing, because it's something I had to unlearn so that I could see my potential for change and growth. So I think we need to look very closely at the services that we provide and question whether they're actually hurting people, and actually sort of create a different perspective where we have a much greater range of possibilities. There's a huge interest in holistic health. There's a huge interest in nutrition. There's a huge, huge interest in getting people involved with the community now. Let's provide those services too, and then let people explore and find what's helpful for them. And in terms of just diversity in general, I mean, I would like to see our society accommodate much different range of mind states, so that people don't have to be so ashamed and don't have to be so hiding and quiet and sort of in the closet about our emotional extremes. A lot of us go through all kinds of wild experiences. The number of people who hear voices, for example, is actually relatively high in society. Not all people who hear voices are in the mental health system. A lot of people just have very strange experiences that are different than the norm, but we sort of pathologize and we make these experiences part of an illness, and therefore people don't want to talk about them or don't want to share that they're also going through them.
Mary O'Hagan, coming back to you, and I think you would certainly be of the mindset, if I've received your views correctly, that we do over-medicate and we do have too narrow a means of support systems for people and an approach to people. Where do you believe New Zealand is at in providing just the sort of environment that Will's been outlining there?
Well, there are isolated pockets of very good services. But on the whole, if you walk into a mental health service today, if they'll let you in, you're not likely to come across these good services, and that still bothers me. And a good service is one where people have choice. They're not forced to take medication or do anything else. Where they have, they have options like peer support, learning how to deal with their lives, given that there are sort of interruptions and emotional extremes. Also, services that assist people to get housing and employment. I mean, these are really basic things that have often been neglected by services. So it's really about, I want a house, I want a job, I want to be treated with respect, and I want to be able to, there's a whole menu of things out there that might be useful for me. I want you to tell me where those things are and give me access to them. And I'll make my mind up myself about what's helpful and what's not helpful.
And the medical profession in this country still inclined towards medication as a first resort?
Well, I think really the medical profession created the mental health system initially. Psychiatry grew up in the asylums. And I think we've still got to get the medical profession out of the centre and to the side.
Would you put a caveat, though, on someone taking medication currently?
No.
It's not the way you don't have it out, right?
I take medication myself. I mean, I certainly wouldn't take antipsychotics, but I take other medication. And I did a cost-benefit analysis of that. And it was either have a very unpredictable life, where I could get up in the morning and not know I'd get through the day, where I couldn't sustain a job or my studies, and I had that choice, or I had a choice of going on a medication. I don't know what the long-term side effects are or anything like that. There's a lot that's not known about these medications, but I decided that that risk was worth taking. And I think that the medication I'm on has actually enabled me to live the kind of life that I wanted. And that's what it's about. It's about the tools to live the life you want when you've experienced these extremes.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Mary O'Hagan there, former Mental Health Commissioner, and also speaking to Will Hall of the Icarus Project. Locally, if you want to get involved, Mad Pride Australasia this weekend. There's a series of workshops going on in Hamilton to raise awareness of Mad Pride in New Zealand. If you're interested, you can visit the website madpride.info, or you can get in touch with Centre 401 in Hamilton. I've got a phone number here, 07838 0199, 07838 0199. That is Donna at Centre 401 in Hamilton.